Welcome to Killer Women with your host, best-selling author, Danielle Girard. And now, Danielle's next Killer Woman.
Hello, and welcome to Killer Women Podcast, a proud member of the Authors on the Air global network with more than 4 million listeners. I am your host, suspense author Danielle Girard, and my guest today is Chris Harding Thornton. Chris is a professor at the University of Nebraska who has worked a truly impressive collection of jobs. She's been a quality assurance overseer at a condom factory, a jar lid screwer at a plastics plant, a closer at Burger King, a record store clerk, an all-ages club manager, and a PR writer. Her debut novel, Pickard County Atlas, received critical acclaim in The New Yorker, The Wall Street Journal, The Seattle Times, and the Minneapolis Star Tribune, among many other outlets. Her new book, Little Underworld, is what we're here to talk about. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you, Danielle. And thank you for having me on here. I really appreciate it.
Okay. We were just talking ahead of time about how much I love this book and how, you know, if you live in the Midwest, if you've ever lived in the Midwest, if you know anybody who lives in the Midwest, it really captures the Midwest. And of course, it's the 1930s, which makes it all sort of more fabulous. So before we dig into all the fun stuff about Little Underworld, can you tell us a little bit about the book?
Yeah, totally. It's set in 1930 during Prohibition in Omaha, obviously. This ex-cop who has become a private detective, Jim Beeley, he just had his wife leave him and she took their daughter with him or with her. She had been sexually assaulted by a man that Jim had let stay in their house. So when the book opens, Jim and his brother, Ward, are dunking this guy in the Missouri River to scare him and get him to leave town for good. But then Jim's got some anger control problems and his rage takes over and he drowns the guy. He takes him to a mortician that he knows, an ex-county coroner, to get the guy cremated. But there he runs into this dirty cop he used to work with, Frank Tverdick. Frank sees this, like, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours situation, and asks Jim to help him take down this holier-than-thou politician. It's a pretty simple favor, but it goes sideways, of course.
It does.
And they wind up chasing through Omaha's things that were illegal in the Omaha Underground in 1930, like, brothels and liquor joints and gambling places, but even seedier, they run afoul of local politicians who are super corrupt. So murder, mayhem, manslaughter, and media.
In the Midwest.
Yeah, lots of newspapers because Omaha had a lot of newspapers. It just gets wild.
It is so fun. And we were talking earlier because my best friend from college grew up in Omaha, and we the book really does, you know, typify the Midwest. And also we were talking earlier, and if you watched my quote of the week four weeks ago, I quoted from the book because there's such a lovely quote about Jim and loneliness, and it actually really gives you a really good flavor for Jim's personality sort of right in those few sentences. And if you didn't hear it, go back and find it because it's super fun. I want to unpeel, there's so many layers. So when you said that she was assaulted, the daughter was assaulted by the man that was living with him. I just want to clarify that for the, and of course, like any good father, you know, he has rage against Vern, and Vern does not get to continue in his life. And then there's this fabulous, like, so, you know, Jim's wife has left him with their daughter, and Ward does not have children, has this very fiery, fabulous girlfriend, Edith, who's occasionally a little on the verge of insane. And and her dad, Pop, owns a, you know, soda shop, which is, of course, what they called, you know, liquor joints during Prohibition. And anyway, there's just so many fabulous layers that I loved. And the books, if you're a fan of Lou Burney, who has this, you know, it has this, and I'm a huge fan of Lou Burney, both the writer and the human.
So good. Your,
this book has the, it has that sort of noir, dark humor. There are laugh out loud moments, which, you know, you laugh and you think it's inappropriate to laugh, but you kind of can't help laughing because it's so nuanced. And it's we talk about all sorts of thrillers on the show, of course. But what I love about it, what I enjoyed a lot of it is it's not your typical thriller, right? It's got all the nuance of sort of like the character driven stuff and the, it's so atmospheric. I'm going to just babble because I just loved it so much. And I thought, plus I have to say, I love the, cover is so beautifully done. They did such a fun,
I love it.
I know they did such a, and what this is supposed to sort of represent, it's just like a, it's so bizarre, but it really does capture, there isn't like a Stay Puft Marshmallow Man in the book. But it does sort of typify this sort of like real, duality in the story. And I actually, well, I got really nervous when Frank, the corrupt cop showed up. He actually adds, there's not much I can say to you without like to the audience without like wanting to just unpeel the book and give you too much. So let's talk about the like how this came to be. I did not read your first book. So I don't know if this is, you know, if you're the sort of historic ambiance is your thing. Tell us how this came to be.
This was a weird one. I'm really into genealogy. Like the dedication of the book, you'll see like it's dedicated to, I was born with 11 grandparents still alive. So like my parents' parents, six of my parents' parents' parents, and then one of my great, great grandmas. That's the easiest way to say that. So, and I grew up with them and like lived with some of them, lived next door to some of them, lived a mile from some, a block away from one. So I guess I really got into genealogy just sort of like, because, you know, families have secrets and I'm interested in those secrets. And also, you know, you miss them. So you want to connect with them. And Jim and Ward, to a certain extent, were loosely based on my great grandpa's uncles and I grew up next door to my great grandpa. And so when I started digging in and finding out about Jim, specifically, I was just like, what? What did you do? So that was a big part of it. The previous book was set in 1978, which I have some memory of. So that was not as much of a research intensive thing. But yeah, I think I have this, whenever I sit down to write, I think, where would I like to be for a while?
Mm-hmm. Because like, it's a long while, right? I mean, yeah. it's not like a few hours. It's like, years.
Years, yeah. So that's kind of where I started, I think. I didn't outline much. I outlined some other things before I wrote the book, just because I was kind of intrigued by this idea of noir, because people said the first book was kind of noir, and I was like, I didn't even realize it was kind of noir. And so I did a little research, like I read like the screenplay for Chinatown and I outlined it, but then this book gets way more complicated than Chinatown, I think. Nothing against Chinatown, obviously, but yeah. So that's kind of how it started.
It's so, well, and the other thing is it's a time of in the country's history where everybody's really interested and focused on where everybody comes from, right? Like where your parents are from, you know, immigrated from whatever. It's all very, and you know, in these cities, there's pockets of different sort of, you know, groups from different countries. And Beely, nobody seems to know where Beely comes from, if it was like a made up name or, and so that becomes like, it's a little bit of an interesting, you know, it's a stigma, right? It's like any of these things, like, and it's a certain, like now nobody really cares. Like you could say, well, my last name's French, but I'm a mutt, right? Most of us are sort of more or less mutts, at least if we came over, if our, you know, people came over ages ago. But there's all these little sort of dings against, you know, against Jim in the beginning, right? Like, you know, where does the name Billy come from, and where, who are his people, and you know, his parents, and which I, you know, I love it. It has all this nuance. And the thing, and one of the things I also loved, and I'm going to quote because I just thought that was so great, is they talk about, you know, we'd know so much more about sort of like places like New York in the 1930s or Chicago in the 1930s or even LA, right, in the 1930s, but Omaha, Nebraska, less so. But I love this quote. And you and I talked about this earlier. This is he's comparing Chicago to Omaha. And he says, if you wanted to kill somebody, Chicago had the edge on options. If you wanted to get away with it, Omaha was a safe bet, which I just love. I mean, and it's, that's the kind of humor that just is infused throughout the book. So tell us, like, you know, Jim was your sort of focus. Where did characters like Pop and Edith come in? Those are sort of Ward's people. I mean, do you find that when you're writing, you just sort of, these are inventions, or they seed somewhere from reality? How does that work for you?
Well, because Ward kind of was seeded from reality, but I took him in a different direction. Pop and Edith are based on real people who did exist. But yeah, no, Edith, I mean, her personality, like who she is, like that was she just took over. You know how characters just like, they're, yeah, like, I'm doing this, you know. Pop stayed a little bit closer to the character he was based on, but no, Edith was her own thing. Like I just let her do her thing.
It's fun too, because I feel like, you know, the book, you know, we're killer women, so we talk a lot about the women in the book, and really the, you know, these are, most of the characters here are male, but there are these Pop characters, and Edith is one, and I'm going to forget the name, the owner of the brothel, is one, these sort
Mimi.
Of, yeah, these fabulous women who are just like, they don't, I mean, they're not acting like women of the 1930s. They're like, sort of like, screw the rules. This is who we are. And Jim handles them with a lot of respect, right? There's not, and even Frank sort of pretends that he's like a little tough, but there's definitely sort of a little bit of fear in, about
Jenny,
Edith.
His wife too.
Yes, yeah. And his wife, and yeah.
Who we never see.
No, but he is right. He is like a guy who's like, I gotta be home. I've got kids. My wife is gonna kill me. But in a really, like, I love that, because it seems less typical for the time. And I do appreciate that these are really, they're family men, right? In this weird, dark world. I mean, yeah. Ish, right? Yeah.
Yeah. No, they are. I mean, I think, yeah, and Mrs. Teagarden is a character that comes up who is a editor of a paper, and that's,
yes,
based on a real person. And even there's a mention at a point of a federal judge who's a woman, which is a really, really small mention.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that was true. Like,
right,
there was a federal judge. She was a woman. Like, the editor, same thing. And I come from a family where, like, it's kind of a matriarchal family.
Mm-hmm.
Where they do kind of call all the shots, and they do kind of run things. So yeah, I think that that's something that I really wanted to have represented in this.
It's fun. And also the idea that, you know, that these male characters, it's also about family. I mean, you know, Jim really wants to protect Ward. He you know, his wife is of course never on the page either, because she's gone, but there's a lot of the things he does are based on the intention of, like, you know, maybe dreaming that he will get her back, or, you know, or making things, you know, right. And I mean, it's just like, there's all that runs through it. And I think it's so beautifully done, but I, you know, more than that, it's like you said, there's a lot. I mean, Chinatown's a, you know, you can only do so much in a movie, I think, but what is wonderful about this is that you just, there's just all these things to unpeel. Like, just when you think you're like, oh, this is where we're headed, you're like, nope, that's not where we're headed, but not in a whiplashy way, in a wonderful sort of like character. This is all about characters, which I think in the, you know, in today's thriller market, and I love a fast pace, you know, turn the pages because of the plot stuff, but this is much more of a character story about this, you know, really about Jim, and this, you know, and his sort of really, I mean, he's living in his office. He pays for his, he pays for a home where his, you know, wife and daughter lived and left, but he doesn't stay there. He doesn't ever stay there. He has, you know, he sleeps in his office on a, you know, mattress that he rolls into his closet during the day. I mean, it's really, really beautifully done. It's just so fun. I feel like that. Yeah. I feel like I'm just, all I can do is rave about it. So tell us, like, you know, when you're, I mean, it feels like this, I mean, the one thing I thought about, and I don't know if this is something that you've thought about or talked about, is it almost felt like it could be the beginning of a series, right? I mean, this is a, because how we leave the book, with, I'm not going to tell anybody how we leave the book because you have to read it, but is that something that's been considered?
It's something that I have definitely considered. Yeah, because there's a big period in there between the end and the main events where a lot could be done. And I think that could be a really, really fun thing to read it for sure. And stuff in Omaha, I mean, what happened after all of this that occurred. And not to say that the a lot of the book is fiction, obviously. It's a fictional book, but Omaha just has a really interesting history that I think, you know, I guess I relate it to our current contemporary day, too. I think a lot of the political corruption, I mean, that's just a thing, you know?
Yeah. That is just a thing.
Some things might be legal now that weren't legal then, but it doesn't make, and I think a lot of the book is about inequality in general. And I think that obviously that pertains always. So yeah, I've thought about doing a series. We'll see if I do that or not. I'm so used to these standalone pieces. So it's new territory. It's definitely new territory. I also think it's kind of a love story in a really unconventional way.
Yeah.
But that's just me.
I think it's actually kind of that perfect. I mean, and this is, I think this is really the question is more about, like, you know, when you love a book so much, you're kind of like not quite ready for it to be over. You're like, well, what's the, like, what are they doing now? Like, what, you know, where's, what happened with Jim's wife? Has he seen his daughter? Like, you know, Ward and Edith and, you know, and Frank and Jenny and Frank and the relationship between Frank and Jim, you know, I mean, it's just a lot of, you know, and obviously all the politicians who did or did not get their comeuppance. So there's just a lot of opportunity. So that is what that's about. But, and that's actually probably the sign of a really, you know, well done book is we're just like, huh, we're not quite over it. Nothing was left unanswered, you know, at least not part of the active plot, but like lots of things are like, we could explore that some more. I'd like to hear some more about that, you know? But anyway, it was so fun. So can you tell us what you're working on now? I know you're also a full-time teacher and life is incredibly chaotic. So it's not, you know, this is not, I hate almost that question, right? You're like, I just finished a book. It's coming out. It's not even out yet. And everyone's like, what's next? And you're like, could you cut me a little slack? I haven't slept in 6 months.
It's wild, right? Because you write this book and it takes 2 years and then people read it in an afternoon or a day or a couple days and you're like,
you're like, well, that's what I've got for you right now. But
I expect it to be read in one sitting a lot of times. So, because that's how I read. I'm a reader who does that in one sitting. Right now I am, you know, I think it's that thing where you're always writing.
Yeah.
Like even when you're not actively putting words on the page. So I have two simultaneous things going on right now. And one is based back in Pickard County, earlier than Pickard County Atlas. And then the other one, is based in Omaha and has to do with the characters that you get to know in this book. So we'll see which one wins the race.
I love that. So talk to me about that. I've not had a lot of people tell me that they're working on two things at once. How do you do that?
Well, I mean, honestly, I mean, what's going to happen is one's going to win. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to end up dedicating all my time to that. But if I have the other one that I'm like, I've got enough of the seeds planted that I can go ahead and grow those, then I'll come back to that one next. So it just depends on which one wins the race, I think.
And that's like more like your focus, like which one you want to focus on more. Okay, I got it.
Because I know writers who can do that, who can like juggle and move between worlds and things. And I am not that person. Mm-mm. I'm like, I hone in on something and I just have to be in that world for a while.
Yeah.
You know, so like summers is usually when I knock out a lot of stuff. I'm not a super fast writer. It takes me probably 18 months to get a draft or so, at least.
Yeah.
And Pickerton, I didn't have 18 continuous months at all. So that thing took 12 years basically to get it to fruition. And yeah.
Whew. Well, I think a lot of first books, you have the luxury of time and you also don't have a contract. So you have to make the book as good as it can possibly be. And so that does by its nature take time. And then there's a real shift because once you have a contract, they're like, and when can you deliver the next book? So, I mean, and we talk a lot about sophomore slump, right? Like that the second book feels more rushed and less sort of, and I didn't read Pickard County Atlas, but if this is your sophomore slump, I would say, well done. it is really, really so fun. So,
thank you.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you're working on these two worlds. So it sounds like we should read Pickard County Atlas because that we might be back in that world or we might be back in Little Underworld.
They're so different. The books are just so different too. But I'm so glad you brought up the sophomore slump thing because I think that's something that we writers internalize. I don't know, you know, yeah, to some extent, like if people like the first one and they're like meh, on the second one, yeah, but that doesn't matter to us. I think what matters is like how we feel about the book. And when you have this like, okay, when can you get us the next draft, it's just like and then you feel like it's not done and you know, oh, I could have done this better and that better. Yeah, when you have a ton of time, it's just like, oh no, this is a good book, I'm good with it.
Yeah. Well, and it's about taking the time too. I think that's another thing is, you know, that obviously the market always wants us to be faster, better. And, you know, it depends on the pressure you're getting from the publisher as well. But you clearly with this book, you were like, I need the time I need because I'm not going to send in something that's not going to be done. And I'm assuming you love your editor too, because it feels like there's, you know, beautiful collaboration. I'm sure, you know, that this wasn't the book. I mean, I think in a really good editor makes all the difference too. I mean, this is your work, but it takes a team.
Yeah, no, you need someone outside of your head because you've been writing into a void forever. So you need someone outside your head to just be like, that doesn't make sense or that makes complete sense. And a lot of times the stuff I doubt is the stuff that the editor will be like, no, that's great. You know, and maybe it's because we work harder on those parts than other parts. I don't know. But yeah, Daphne Durham was the editor on this book and Pickard County Atlas. And yeah, she just did an amazing job with giving feedback and even just having faith, you know, it's amazing. So
that's so fun. Today is the day that you can go get Little Underworld and you're going to want to. So tell us, Chris, how do we connect with you? How do readers tell you how much they love this book?
I've got an Instagram page. I'm on Twitter. I'm still calling it Twitter. I'm just going to keep calling it Twitter. I have one of those.
do you know what your handle is on Instagram? I'm trying to, I know I tagged you.
Chris_Harding_Thornton. I want to say.
You'll find her. She's tagged. She should be tagged on my page as well with our March reads. And I mean, I feel a little dumb today because I don't have like all these really intelligent questions for you because I just really appreciated the book and I did really laugh out loud and
I'm so glad because
so fun.
it's you feel silly, you're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes, but I did. I have to. I mean, I kind of have to. Like, Omaha was such a messed up place back in the day, and not to say it's perfect now, but yeah. So you kind of have to either have a sense of humor. You have to have a sense of humor about it,
Yeah, well, it was. I mean, it is actually, and it, I love, and actually, what they call it, they say, Chinatown meets the Coen brothers in 1930s Omaha. And that's actually really that's a pretty apt description because it has those elements. And anyway, I loved it so much, everybody. This is Little Underworld. It's a fabulous cover. If you can't see it, you're listening to us, go check it out. Chris Harding Thornton. And we will be giving away a copy. So keep an eye on the Killer Women Facebook page and join our group and for a chance to win a copy of Little Underworld. Chris, thank you so much for joining me today. It was so fun.
Thank you, Danielle.
Everybody, this is Killer Women. We will see you next time. Bye.